is Joe.
And I'm Jordan.
Oh, that had some spice to it.
Oh, it did, didn't it?
And this is Double Trouble Features, the weekly podcast where we talk about all things movies, television, entertainment, what's streaming, and what's on these damn screens.
These screens. Again, I'm not going to lie, Joe. My eyesight's getting worse. I have noticed, like, tremendously my eyesight's getting worse. And I really do think it's because I'm watching way too much TV at this point.
I don't know. I have my glasses and I'm fine.
Yeah, I have glasses with the blue light.
Yeah, I paid extra for that. Thanks, insurance. I pay a lot of money for that fucking insurance. You better do something for me.
Exactly.
How are you doing today? What are we going to be talking about?
I'm doing great. I think we actually have a really good episode. You and me kind of set this up nice. We're going to talk about, first of all, binging versus weekly TV shows. That's going to be a nice little debate. But then also we're going to talk about, you know, same format as always, the movies we've watched. What movie did you watch again?
I watched The Tearsmith on Netflix.
Oh, yes. I can't. Oh, cannot wait for you to talk about this.
It's going
to
be full spoilers because this movie is bonkers.
I'm going to talk about Civil War.
I can't wait to hear about this. Cannot
wait.
I need to go see it so bad.
Then we're going to talk about some of our TV show recommendations. One of mine is kind of a, I don't know, but
I mean, we've both watched each other's television shows, Fallout and Invincible.
And then we're going to talk about the movie lineup, the show lineups that's coming out, all the trailers that came out during CinemaCon.
Yeah, CinemaCon kind of went ham, and we're going to kind of dive into it and see what we got slated for this year.
Yeah, I cannot wait.
All right, so we're going to get into something that has been widely debated across multiple platforms, and that is weekly releases of television shows versus dumping it all and letting us binge it like the little animal piggies we are.
So IGN, one of my favorite networks, shout out to IGN.
He sends me IGN reels every day.
I do love IGN. I'm also a gamer. So
I'm not going to lie, I kind of like it. I'm like, ooh, a daily update.
Yeah. IGN posted about Fallout, show we're going to get to later, that it's great, it's an amazing show, but it needed that weekly breath between episodes. And so I just want to ask, like, what are your thoughts? Are you binge or are you for the weekly drops?
I'm not going to lie, I'm really for weekly drops just because I, like I said, little piggy, I will consume as much as you put in front of me as fast as I can. And it's kind of interesting. And at least on a first watch of a show, I really like having that time to digest between each episode. And it gives the cultural context to chat about the show. Like, people pick up on stuff because we don't have anything else. All we have to focus on is what was shown to us last week. And so we have to go a whole week, and you see the BuzzFeed articles and the Hollywood Reporters. They're all talking about like what's going on, the memes, the TikToks. And honestly, I think it's one of the reasons that X-Men 97 is popping off so hard right now is because they're doing the weekly releases and people are insatiable for it. So they are dissecting this 30 minutes of television for a week straight.
So I'm not going to lie, X-Men 97 is actually pissing me off because I have to wait. Like, I have to wait for each, especially what happened after last week.
But I get
so, especially but, what happened after last
but
week.
But I get so excited on Wednesdays when I finally get home, turn on my TV, new episode.
Hey,
I get so excited every week.
Spoiler warning, you can fast forward like 15 seconds. My nigga Gambit?
Ours. He's that is a bisexual man.
Oh, man.
He's a beautiful bisexual man.
But anyway, so my thought is I'm pro binge because if it's on a streaming service like Netflix or Prime Video, I feel like it all needs to be there all at once. Like, let me get the time to binge. Let me get the time. I'll set up my own schedule when, like, me and my wife, like, we like to watch, like for perfect example, last night was Shogun, okay? Mm-hmm. Shogun, we watched 3 episodes of Shogun, and it was and the only episode left now is the finale, which pisses me off.
Grow up.
Because,
what?
Guys, by the way, just a thing about Shogun, like I already talked about earlier, Shogun is that show. Shogun is really that show.
I really
highly recommend, cannot not recommend it enough. Watch Shogun. It is beautiful. But anyway, I that premieres on FX. And so I'm okay with Shogun being a weekly. So if you're on like an actual channel, like a cable channel, so like if you're on an FX, an ABC, Fox, even HBO, since they have their own channels on like Xfinity and all the and Spectrum, all that kind of stuff, I'm okay with that because I like having that, hey, at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock on Sunday nights for House of Dragons. That way, like you said, we're all there watching it. I have my live Twitter feed, X, sorry. Not sorry, actually. I have my live Twitter feed right here. I'm about to go on Reddit and stuff. Yeah, and like you said, we're dissecting for a whole week. But if it's like something like Love is Blind, where, hey, we're going to premiere an episode at midnight or at like 5 a.m. in the morning, then not everybody's watching at the same time. Random people are watching at a random time. So it doesn't feel as like tight-niched.
But that's what I'm saying is, it sounds like you agree with me because, I would agree with you if it wasn't 8 episodes and then a year and a half for anything else.
Yeah.
I get that. It's that part that pisses me off. Cause if I binge something in a weekend, which I will do very easily, especially if it's like, if it's only 8 episodes, it's not even 8 hours. That's not even a work day.
I'm not leaving. Like if it's like especially if it's a boring week, actually, first of all, as an adult, the best weekends are the weekends you have nothing to do.
What? Like, I don't even know what that's like.
Like the weekend of not doing anything. And so, yes, I will love a good weekend, especially like after, you know, NBA. I know you don't watch basketball, but like after NBA is done and it's that time between NBA and NFL, there's nothing for me to watch, really. There's no sports for the weekends for me to watch. So I'm sitting down and I'm binging anything and everything. And so that's what I love to do on like a boring ass Saturday.
But we're sitting here and like even Stranger Things has started like doing kind of like, and Bridgerton has started doing like kind of like a syncopated kind of like, they're like, first drop is on this date and then 2 months later it's the second drop.
But see, I hate that though.
That's
the worst of the, I would rather have a weekly or a binge than what Invincible did, which, hey, we're going to do 4 episodes here, drop off the face of the of the earth for 2 to 3 months, and then we're going to restart? Like, no.
Well, see, but that's where the 22-episode seasons used to be, because it used to be 11 episodes, and then they would take basically the winter off, and then in the spring, it would be the next 11 episodes.
Yep, like late February to early March, that's when they come back. And I was okay with that, because I'm getting 11 weeks worth of content.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, is like, if every show always did a weekly schedule, you would always have something to watch.
Yeah. I don't know. But again, like, sometimes I just like a good Saturday, Friday night.
But that's what I think that shows that you've already watched before. I like binging a show I've already seen, like I did with Game of Thrones, and it kind of gave it a different context for me. Because I originally watched it on a weekly basis, or if like when I was in college, whenever the DVDs would come out, and I would steal it from someone and on my floor. But
that's a valid point.
But then you could go back and you revisit the material and you're like, I feel like it's really good to binge then, because then the storylines made even more sense to me with the whole Daenerys thing. But we're not going to get into that. We're not going to talk about Game of Thrones just yet.
Yeah, but like for me, it's just like, I do agree with you of like watching it weekly and then binging it again. But like, at least for me, there's not that many shows I rewatch. Like I probably would say I've rewatched Game of Thrones like 4 times.
Oh my God.
Yes. Like when I tell you I'm a Game of Thrones stan, like I really am.
I've only seen it.
Yeah.
I had my original watch and then my one rewatch over COVID.
Yeah. And so like my wife, like she really wants to like rewatch Game of Thrones because when we were first dating, I like, it was the premiere or it was the finale, oh, like the last God. Season. And we had like 2 months and I was like, we're binging all of it. So she's like, to be honest, I didn't have like time to like no. breathe and to think about what's happening because I just watched, you know, like 60, 70 episodes yeah. To get there. And so like, I do understand like the breathing in between each episode, you really get to think about it. Sometimes you have time to rewatch the episode. But I just think if you're on a streaming service, I just need it all. Like, that's the point of Netflix. That's the point of Netflix. That's the point of Disney Plus.
I'll say yes, only if we can speed these production times up a little, y'all. What the fuck do you mean 2 years, a year and a half? Come on, grow
up. Especially for animated. What are we doing with these animated, like Invincible, like taking all this time? Like, what are we
doing? Especially when you like have the source material. It was a comic first. Like, yes. Like you just got to keep going. Like, what are we doing with our breaks, our things? And I know that it's all contracts and bullshit, but like, come on, this model isn't working. And that's why there's so much shit out there that just like nobody, like there's so much shit and I don't want to watch it.
Yeah. And so, and that's why I like the channels of like, hey, you get the weekly. But now that like a lot of these streaming companies are starting to understand, you know what? Let's make something called channels. And I'm talking to you, Disney Plus.
Oh, Disney Plus. Yes, they've invented cable television, guys. It's a magical, wonderful.
First of all, it's not Disney Plus. Shudder did this way before.
Well, I mean, a lot of them do it already, but they didn't. The thing is, like, they didn't announce it.
Yes.
They weren't like, hey, guys, we came up with this cool fucking idea, channels.
Yeah, where you could just, where no matter what, a random Disney movie is going to be playing. And if you just want to, just turn it on, you can.
Like, yeah, girl, we know.
We know. Like, it's just, again, it's just all reverting back to.
I think that these streaming wars, which we call them, I hope in the future they still call them the streaming wars. And we look back at them like, oh, I survived the streaming wars. But my point is, I think that we're just going to end up going back to the same model before. Ads,
they can't survive.
It's just gotten to a point where like you can't, like these media companies cannot survive without this ad space.
No, they, so like funny thing about this, like I listen to a lot of like podcasts and stuff like that about this, mm-hmm. and they're just like, no, they don't make money off of people buying the highest ad tier, like the no ad tier, which I do. I'm a very pro screw ads.
Yep.
So I pay extra for all the no ads. They don't make money off of it. They make money off the low tier mm-hmm. where there is ads, because that's the only way they make money.
Yeah.
That's the whole business model, which is exactly what TV did.
And that's also why Netflix and streaming in general has been losing so much money hand over fist, is because they don't have advertising and their sole revenue is from their streamers. Like your monthly, your $10 a month, and if only 70.
Hey, shout out to my dad paying that $20-some-odd.
Girl, I pay that. I pay that myself.
You know what's crazy? Like it's so crazy to me. Like when like my dad originally said yes, like I'll get Netflix, and it was like $7, and he's like, that's nothing. And then now it's like $20-some-odd. Like it's just, it's crazy.
I was the one who got Netflix in our house.
Oh my God. No. But that's the only one you pay for.
No, it's not.
What else do you pay for?
I pay for Disney Plus.
Oh my God. I pay for Netflix.
Those are two very expensive ones.
You know what? I pay for Amazon Prime.
Oh, you fine. I also pay for my Amazon Prime.
The ad free tier?
No.
Yeah. I pay that extra $3.
Okay. I don't know if that's the flex you think it is.
It's not a flex, but fuck you, Amazon and Jeff Bezos.
All right, so now we're getting into some movies today, and I've been waiting to talk about this one.
Yeah, so tell me about the famous Tearsmith.
The Tearsmith. So this is an Italian film on Netflix. It was dubbed over American. You can hardly tell. It's absolutely one of the most batshit insane movies I've seen in a while. First of all, the reason I watched it, because I thought it was like a fantasy movie, and the wrong kind of fantasy. I thought it was like
batshit.
I thought that it was going to be like a whimsy fantasy movie, teenagers, whatever. It was not that. There was no fantasy involved, but there were fantasies involved, let me tell you. So what this is about, it's about...
I'm so confused and intrigued at the same time.
It is about this girl, Nika. She is an orphan.
Okay.
Her parents, literally, she's like in the back of a car. Parents died. That's the first 30 seconds of the movie.
Cool.
She gets sent to an orphanage where she is like beaten, flogged, and all of, tortured, basically. And all of the kids are tortured, but the lady in charge of this, and they called it the grave. And the lady in charge of this orphanage hated this girl, Nika. Hated
Fuck
her.
Fuck you, Nika.
So she grows up in the orphanage. Everything's whatever. It goes very fast in this beginning sequence. She grows up in the orphanage. She's getting tortured. Everyone's getting tortured. She becomes best friends with this little albino chick. Things get weird. And the little girl just goes, let's be best friends. And she's like, okay. And so they become best friends. And that's as far as this girl's character goes. Nice. Then she grows up. A little bit. They're like teenagers. And she gets adopted as a teenager by this family. It's a little weird. And as she is leaving to go to with this family, they're like, by the way, we also want that boy over there. And it's this like moody teenage boy with like tattoos. He plays the piano. And the whole thing is like they hated each other growing up. Like he hates her and all this stuff. And like she's like, I don't get why he hates me so much. But now we're being forced to go live under the same roof by our adoptive parents together.
Do they fall in love?
Jordan. So the reason this movie is called The Tearsmiths is because of... I don't know if this is an Italian thing or something made up, but it's like this fanciful idea of the guy who creates tears and this guy who creates tears, and the tearsmith cannot lie to you, and he like creates these crystal tears for you. And it's like, I did not understand it. I'm not going to lie. And I even tried to look at it. I was like, because I thought this was, because they like went into it, and I thought it was going to be like a major plot of the story. It was not. It was like the overarching theme.
Bro, what?
Like, it did not make any fucking sense. So they start going to school, things happen, and she's like, I still don't get why this boy hates me so much. She starts dating this other guy, stuff happens. It becomes a teen romance,
yeah,
of these two orphan kids together. And the sex scenes in it are very intense.
Oh, they're fucking.
Yeah. And I like looked their ages up after, because I was like, these are teenagers who were adopted and they were orphans. So I look it up and there's like this whole thing of, like, she's like 21, he's like 26. And I was like, okay, now I don't feel as bad anymore.
Okay.
But I'm trying to remember the other characters, because the other characters in the movie are so one-dimensional. Like the parents, it's that you do not, it's just this girl's inner monologue being like, why does this boy hate me so much? And him being like, obviously so horny all the time. And he's just like playing piano.
Hey, that's what happens to boys.
So they're like sitting there and at dinner with the parents, and there's like this whole fight that happens because it turns out these parents had a son that died, a teenage son that died. And so they're like, you know what we're going to do? Adopt two teenagers. And you know what else we're going to do? We're going to invite our dead son's girlfriend over to the house to meet them.
I'm not going to lie. This is sounding like a great plot right now.
So, but So they get into like a fight and she's like, you can't replace the boy I love.
Nobody's trying to.
Yeah. And the parents are just like, and then the kids go, and then the teenagers go off and fuck. It was so confusing. But so then there's like an accident that happens and it's so confusing. There's some accident that happens. He gets hurt. And for some reason he ends up not signing on to stay with the family. It's like a partial, like temporary arrangement. And he's like, you have to sign to stay on as like the kid you have like to want to stay with the family. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. Because
and that's the hardship of the relationship.
There was an accident, and then he gets sent back to the orphanage, and she decides that now is the time to sue the orphanage. She sues the orphanage for all the things that happened to her as a child when she was tortured there. And she goes on a little campaign with her little friends and starts like pulling in other people and like building this case against this orphanage and the lady running it. So it becomes a courtroom drama.
How many stars?
Okay. So here's the thing. This was about 4 out of 10. If you're just a normal person trying to enjoy a movie, it kept going in all of these places that was just like, that was an odd choice. And yeah, at the end of it, there's no magic. It became a courtroom drama at the end. So I would say 4 out of 10 for normal people. But if you are into fan fiction, Wattpad, AO3, if you want some self-insert, nasty, M-rated, XX-rated fan fiction. Oh, so they're
fucking in this movie.
I mean, here's the thing. Yes, it's so much like, it's like touching like this. And it's like rubbing each other. And like anytime he would like be walking by the house and like would brush her arm, she'd be like, and I'm not kidding. It was nonstop.
Nude scenes?
Yes.
Okay.
You do see boobs.
Boobies.
Boobs. We love them. Which is when I went and started looking up ages because I was like, hold on.
Bro, that was me for Euphoria. I was just like, I was teaching at that time, so I was just like, what are we doing? And I was like, pretty sure Zendaya is not that much. Like, she's not that young.
Yeah. Like, but basically, if you're just a normal person, this is like a Saturday afternoon in the background movie. If you are really into fan fiction and the thought of having One Direction buying you from your parents ever has crossed your timeline, this is the movie for you. Do Not Walk, run to it on Netflix right now, The Tearsmith.
I'm so confused. Did you like the movie? Like, I don't know if you liked it or not.
I liked it for what it was, which was teenage smut.
Okay, there we go.
Which is why it's a 4. All right, so that was The Tearsmith. What did you watch this week,
top-tier
Jordan?
Top tier movie. So I watched Civil War with Kristen Dunst. And I would have to say it's an 824 movie. I give it an 8 out of 10. It's a really, really good movie. It's a great movie, actually.
I love Kristen Dunst. I've been a fan of Kirsten Dunst since I was a child. I really want to go see this movie.
I'm not going to lie, though. So in this movie, she is the veteran, like, reporter.
Okay.
Our journalist. She's been taking, like, war pictures for years and years. And in this movie, she plays, like, the hard ass.
That's kind of hot.
Like, the hard ass, like, oh, I've, like, been here. Hey. So, like, here's the premise. Basically, this girl... Seeley, she comes in, she's the new, she wants to be a war, picture taker,
photographer,
that's what they're called, fuck, she wants to be a war photographer, and she's new at it, and Kristen Dunst is like, well, let me kind of like takes her on her wing, but it's like being that hard ass like role model. I'm not going to lie. Kristen Dunst is not a hard ass. Like I see her as Mary Jane, the chick from Bring It On, Like, I just see her.
You don't
like,
think she was a hard ass in Bring It On?
No, not at all.
You don't think she was tearing up the floor? No. You don't think she was a hard ass when she was a fucking 11-year-old vampire? You don't think she was a hard ass when she was fighting monkeys and lions and gators in Jumanji, you son of a bitch?
Bro, she was in Jumanji?
Are you cracked?
Oh, my God. I forgot. That's crazy.
So, yes, she can be a hard ass. Fuck off. Your limited view of women has nothing to do with Kirsten Dunst. Anyway, move on.
Oh, I'm the one with limited views. Everybody thought that this movie was it comes out on election year. Mm-hmm. It's Civil War.
I was very nervous.
America's tearing apart, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think it's a political movie. Me and my wife kind of disagree on this, but I never got like a whole like one party or one is taking over or anything like that. It really comes from a place of war fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I really do think that it takes you to a place of like, hey, this stuff is happening in South America. This is happening in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening in the Middle East. Like, civil wars are happening today.
And some of them were started by us.
Yes. And it's not fun. It's not cool. And so when I think people in America say, like, there's going to be a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't vote this way, if you don't do this, you don't really understand what a real civil war is like. And so these people, it's Kirsten Dunst, a guy who plays Joel Wagner, and Stephen McKinley, who plays Sammy. These four kind of go on. They're trying to go to D.C. because they haven't seen the president, who's Nick Offerman, by the way.
Hell yeah.
They haven't seen the president in, I think it was like 17 months, something like that. And so
I'm not surprised that under Ron Swanson's tutelage, there would be a civil war because libertarians.
And so they want to interview the president and get pictures of the president. And right now, Texas and California are together.
Mm-hmm.
You have some people in the middle, like Seattle, Oregon, not Seattle, Oregon, Washington, and a couple other states. You have the Florida, like all like kind of the South,
mm-hmm.
but then everybody in the Northeast is all the same. And so like you have different sections. So it's not just like two people against each other. But a lot of the commentary was like Kirsten Dunst is like, oh yeah, my parents are on a farm right now, or they're in Colorado. They're not paying attention to it. They're just blown away, like, hey, nothing's happening. And I think that's just reflecting of like how Americans kind of view other things that's happening around the world.
Yeah, I agree. It's very interesting, and very interesting that you say that. I find the apoliticalness of it interesting. I do enjoy that fact that it's less about the politics of a civil war and how we feel in this country right now, but more about what it would actually just look like if a civil war did break out. And it's a little more, not factual, but like a little more, it sounds like it's a little more of like a falsified documentary of sorts.
Yeah. And like the thing is, like, they don't even tell you how the war starts. They don't tell you how the civil war starts at all.
Interesting.
And I actually, yeah, I think that's
a smart idea on their
part.
It's
super smart because, like, again, at the end of the day, doesn't matter what your politics are. It doesn't matter what you believe or don't believe in or whatever, anything like that. At one point, they're driving and, you know, things are happening. Like they're trying to go from New York to DC, and they have to do a lot of roundabout to get there. But at one point, they're on a bridge and there's a sniper and they're getting out of the car and like fighting. It's actually very action heavy movie too.
Ooh.
There's actually a lot of great action scenes, which I was actually very surprised. So I'm super happy about that. But at one point there's a sniper across the ridge trying to shoot at them. And then they find these two guys who are like gillied up. One has a sniper and one's trying to find the dude that's shooting. And they're like, what are we doing? Like, who's that? He's like, I don't know. Guy with a gun. And Joel's like, but what, like, who is that? Like, what are you? Like, I'm the press. Like, I'm like, what's going on? He's just like, yeah, I know you're the press. I can see it on your car. I don't care. Because it's starting to show that, like, eventually we get to a point where you don't know, who cares about this sniper? Like, who cares who he's rooting for, mm-hmm. who he's cheering for? This motherfucker's trying to kill me.
War is war.
War is war. And so I'm killing him. At one point, first, I want to give a shout out to Jesse Plemons. Jesse Plemons is a fantastic actor.
Yeah.
He is fantastic. I love him in, like, I think every movie he's done. And he plays a villain role so well. So he comes up, and just like in the trailers, he asks, like, they capture the girl and Sammy, and you're just like, all right, now Kirsten Dunst has to go try to save her and stuff like that. And he straight up asks, he's like, hey, what American are you? And they're like, I'm from Missouri. Oh, the Show Me State. Why do they call it a Show Me Shit State? Yeah, you know what? That's a good American right there. And then another one's like, I'm from Florida. Oh yeah, real American. This other dude is like, well, I'm like originally from like China. Boom, dead instantly. And like the whole time, it's like, holy shit! Like, what are we doing? Like, now it's just like, oh, I'm a Floridian. I'm a Missourian. I'm this. There's different tiers to being like an American.
Mm-hmm.
And
well.
Yeah. And I think that's what the director's trying to show is, like, this is not good. At the end of the day, we're all American. At the end of the day, we're all together in this one country. Yes, it's a big ass country. Yes, we have different states, different cultures and stuff like that. And 100% we can't agree on shit right now. But breaking out into a civil war would be devastating. And, like, the ending, I think it's so perfect. Nobody's really happy. Nobody's really sad. If you think about, like, what happens in, like, when Gaddafi died. People take pictures. People are doing this. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, now what? A new regime just takes over?
Yeah.
And then some people are at rest. Some people want to create a new terrorist group. Well, are they really terrorists? Are they just fighting back? Like, and so, like, I think that's just the realization of, like, these are journalists who are just trying to document and just trying to show, like, this is what war is like in our country currently.
I find it interesting them going through a journalist lens, because what I'm hearing from what you're saying is that it sounds like what it's really trying to dive into is a little bit of the fact that, like, we as Americans are so desensitized to the idea of violence. Yeah. We're desensitized to the thought of a building blowing up. We're desensitized to the thought of a bunch of people getting gunned down in the streets. But, like, in actuality, to see it, we don't know what we're fucking talking about.
No.
Very few people have actually seen these horrors that are, like, committed in that. Some have, and that's awful, but, like, not at the scale of a full war. The like stuff going on around the world, we have not seen and will probably not see some of the atrocities that are being conducted across the globe on varying sides.
You can talk to anybody who's actually been to, like, real war, been to real combat, or just hear stories of what they say. It's just like, you have these young people who are like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go. Who've never seen action. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, I want the glory. I want the battle. Yeah. I want this. And then every war person tells you, this is not a fun thing.
Well,
this is terrible.
And I've had so many veterans in my life where, like, you know, I've seen them go off on their first deployment and they come home and there's just a light gone from their eyes.
Yeah.
They've been broken. It's a certain part of it. And I think that, like, we just don't understand that. And it sounds like that's what this movie is hitting on.
Yeah. It's like, again, like when people throw around the word Civil War, they think, oh, you know, if these states just succeed, life is going to be okay. It's all great. It's going to be okay. Maybe a little bit of chaos, but, like, you know what? If we succeed, guess what? I get to have my own life and life would be fine. No.
People are going to die in mass.
Hundreds of thousands of people would die.
The most Americans that ever died in a war was the Civil War.
Yeah. So it's, when I tell you it's a great movie, it's a great movie. There actually is a lot of action in it, more action than I thought it was going to be. And I thought it was going to be a very political movie. I don't think it's really that political. I think it's just more of a showing you of, like, hey, this is what it would be like.
It almost sounds like you all need to get your fucking act together. Yes. We're going to be dealing with this shit.
Yeah.
And do you want to deal with this shit? No.
I thought it was great acting from all the actors, especially Wagner, who played Joel. I think he was the best actor because he had the most feelings, the most emotions out of everybody. Yeah, highly recommend. Highly recommend. Go see it. Go see it. So we can stop throwing the word Civil War around and
just fucking fix something.
Yeah, let's fix something. All right, so Joe, one of my favorite video games is now a TV show. And I just want to give a quick shout out to TV shows, like game adaptations now.
Yeah.
They have gotten better. Sonic, like the Sonic movies, who now Knuckles is coming out. I think that's a great adaptation. The Last of Us, yes.
I think like the Pikachu Detective movie.
Pikachu Detective, great.
I thought that was enjoyable. Like, I think that we're really starting to see kind of, I think we're starting to finally figure out video games, and I have a theory as to why. So, in case you haven't caught on this week, I watched Fallout.
Yes.
I watched it in its entirety. It is a beautiful show. So well done. Game adaptation. What I really like about it is you kind of see the show. It follows three central characters. Lucy, who lives in these vaults. So basically what Fallout is it lives in an alternate universe where America just got nuked the fuck out of. Everyone got nuked the fuck out of. It was awful. The world destroyed. People knew this was coming. It was set in the early 60s. Like, when this happened, it was the Cold War. They knew it was coming. So this company and these other companies all kind of banded together and created Vault Tech to create vaults all around the world to sustain civilization and what it could be. So
how far in the, like, in the lore do they really go?
Well, I can't tell you here because I don't want to spoil anything.
Oh, you're like,
but
you can spoil the lore.
I'll go into a little bit. So there's another character, the ghoul. He is somebody who is up on the top surface level. He's living in that. He can't really die because he's so radiated and mutated. Yep. That he's unable to die, really. Like, radiation doesn't affect him anymore. Gunshots, he kind of just heals right up. And you effectively become immortal. Like, they get into that because he's been around since the bombs went off. And yeah, this show takes place about 200 some odd years later. And so then you have this third character, Maximus Max, and he's like a grunt of the Brotherhood of Steel. He's like trying to make his way up in the world. He wants to become basically the military. And what the Brotherhood of Steel actually is they're going out, they're looking for artifacts of civilization and different things, basically looking for very valuable items. Sounds similar to the things we do. And willing to kill anyone to get those valuable items. So all these three characters, they, through various odds and ends, end up having to meet. Lucy, she is in the vaults, and basically they get attacked by some raiders, and her dad gets kidnapped, so she has to go and find her dad. This is how she ends up running into Maximus and the ghoul, and you find later on that all of their stories and all of their arcs are very interconnected, and they're all trying, she's trying to find her dad, the Brotherhood is also trying to find this one man, and then there's this hit put out on this guy, and so everyone's trying to find him. She just so happens to find him.
The ghoul?
No, the guy who's being like chased by the ghoul and the Brotherhood.
Okay.
So ends up all this stuff happening. But what I really, and so that's kind of like the setup for the show.
Yeah.
But what I really like about this show is that it was paced very well in the writing. And what I mean by that is, like, I never felt like I was being babied, but I felt like everything was explained to me in a way that made sense. And so what I'm getting at here is, what to your point earlier, with video game adaptations, prior to recently, it's been all style and no substance.
Yeah.
And it's been, and I think,
like Halo, first season of Halo.
I think a lot of these movie execs kind of thought that what made these video games really interesting was the flashy bang, boom, whatever. Like, yeah. Oh, we're like the vibe of it all. Like, that's enough. Like, I think of like Doom. Oh my God, girl. What made that?
Did you like Doom movies?
Do what?
Did you watch the Doom movie?
Yes.
It's a great movie. Yeah, with The Rock.
No, it wasn't.
It's a great movie.
Fuck off. But like, even like with Resident Evil and the problems that whole series has had.
Oh my God. But I watched a lot
I love all of the movies. I love all of them.
They're terrible, though.
But they're terrible and like really don't have anything to do with the movies. They try to like shoehorn in some of the game characters later on. And I was like, what the fuck is Leo doing here all of a sudden? But to my point. That's what I'm saying, is like they went for the style and aesthetic of Resident Evil and they forgot to add in the story.
Yeah.
Like they didn't actually take a look at why these characters are interesting, why we're doing this. So this show, if you love anything, first of all, if you like video games, you'll like this show because it shows three different characters going through this similar world. And the world is so interesting because it really is what would be like 200 years after a complete nuclear holocaust. Like it would, all of the mutations that had happened, these creatures, they call them abominations, the way that society functions and how we go about it, the lies that were told to everybody. Yeah. Because y'all, everything is not what you think in this show, and it really does take its time to tell that story. And it really did feel like a big, not like a twist or anything, but it felt like
a good payoff,
a big reveal that just it felt like a full meal. Like I sat down and I just ate a full meal, and I was completely and utterly, I enjoyed it. It was great, and it didn't leave me wanting for anything other than more episodes.
Yeah, no, and that's the problem with some like shows is there's not a payoff at the end, mm-hmm. or the payoff is so bleak or so weak that you're like, why did I just watch all this? But like with shows like that, and the reason why like Fallout is very successful is because, like you said, these people who make these kind of shows love the game.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like, hey, Resident Evil is a good, great, you know, franchise, let's just make a movie about it. These people actually take their time of like, no, I've played Fallout, I've played Last of Us, and yeah. I love these games. And the beauty about Fallout is that it takes place all over America. And so you could create, as long as the world is there,
mm-hmm.
you could create whatever you want.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is like this world, the world building is so intentional because like you have these three characters who don't know everything. And then when they come together, they're able to share this knowledge between them. It feels natural. It feels normal. Because like when you're going on an adventure, you're going to meet people, and these people are going to have to explain things to you about where you are. And so like I feel like in old movies, they tried to like skip that part for some reason. Like they didn't want to tell the story. But and I'll give them that. But The Last of Us, Fallout, Halo, very intensive stories.
Yeah.
Like, those video games have a whole lore to them, a whole text to them. Like, there's books about these. There's all, yes, these, like, all the, there's all these whole media forces behind these. So part of me thinks that, like, maybe video game stories got a little better.
100%.
Like I think, and I think that we finally found a way to adapt them in a way that makes sense and create a really great product. However, I did pace myself. I watched a few episodes every couple of days because I did want to take the time to enjoy.
Yeah. So do you believe that this show, because Fallout dropped all at one time, do you believe that this show would have benefited from, like, being weekly, or do you think it was fine being?
I definitely think it would have benefited from a weekly drop schedule, because there is so much that happens in each episode that, like, you have to take the time to digest. If you just blast through, you're going to miss a lot of stuff that you wouldn't see, because everything is so interconnected and everything is basically an Easter egg for itself. Whoever designed did the set design for this show and all this, it was just, you could just tell it was really well done, authentically made by fans.
How many stars?
I'm giving a good 8 or 9. Like, I think it was really good.
Yeah. Okay, so next TV show we're going to talk about. This TV show, I think, had one of the best first seasons. My wife is not into, like, animated anything, really.
Mm-hmm.
But we watched that first episode of Invincible, and she was like, what the hell? And then we watched all of it, and I thought especially the end. First of all, if you haven't seen Invincible, spoiler alerts. Okay, for the first season.
For the first season, yeah.
But how Omni-Man just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
God, like that. What? That scene was so emotional, so effective. That's one of the best, I would say one of the best scenes of animation ever.
Yeah. What I like about Invincible specifically is their willingness to, like, do weird shit and, like, really take advantage of the fact that it's an animated medium. And what I mean by that is, like, there's stuff that you see in the show you could not do live action. You could not fucking do it. The gore, the alien stuff, the things that you see.
You know they're going to do it, though, eventually.
Eventually, but, yeah. Like, when AI takes over and can create that out of nothing, sure. But, I mean, right now, we do not have the technology to do with that. And that's what I really enjoy about Invincible, is it takes its medium and makes it go further.
And so, here's the premise of basically Invincible. It just picks off of where Mark just comes back after his dad just beat the shit out of him, and kind of dealing with the trauma of his dad leaving him and leaving his mom. They're all just trying to deal with the fact, while the Guardians of the Globe are still trying to figure out who they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing about this season, is everybody's just trying to figure out their place and, like, what they're supposed to do. And I would probably give this season an 8. I thought it was actually a good season. Here's the fucking problem. So they put out 4 episodes. And I was really good. I was actually, like, really intrigued in these 4 episodes.
And those episodes were fucked up.
Yes.
And, like, the things that happen in that, like, it's starting to get to the point where I'm like, my jaw is dropping at the things that are happening.
Yes.
In the show.
And so, like, you see this last episode, and you're like, holy fucking shit. And then, hey, we're going to take a break real quick. I'm sorry, but, like Amazon.
4 episodes.
Amazon, like, 8, I could maybe think.
Yeah, and, like, then we get 12, another 8.
Yeah, 12 episodes, yes, 100%. You can take a break. But you give me 4, and this is where I'm like, binge versus weekly. You gave me 4 episodes after 4 weeks, and then say, hey, we're taking 2 to 3 months, 2.5 months off.
I think it was more than that, because it just picked up back in, what, March?
February. Yeah.
But I mean,
no, March. Yeah, March.
March. And then I'm pretty
sure it ended in December. It ended in December.
Was it December?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I'm pretty sure it premiered in November.
Okay.
And so, again, I like lose interest almost.
Yeah.
I lose interest because I'm like, oh, my wife liked the first season. We started the second season. She has not brought up like, oh, I want to watch the second, like the, I finished it, but like has not shown any interest because like you can't cut four episodes and then all of a sudden, yeah, we're going to pick up back off where we kind of left off. But there were a good last four episodes.
Yeah. I mean,
like it was good. So this season, the overarching villain is Armstorm. He basically got fucked over by Invincible in every single reality. Mm-hmm. This reality with Invincible, who's a good guy, his character is trying to combine all the knowledge so he can help the entire universe. And then all of a sudden, Invincible comes in. He sees the two bad guys that are helping him. He fights them, blows up, and messes with his mind. And so now, he's the entire big bad. I'm not going to lie, though. The only problem I had with him being the big bad, I thought the fight scene was great. I thought his last, like, what they did at the end was mm-hmm. good for him. But I just thought it was kind of a smaller payoff.
Yes.
You know?
I agree, but also he was the overarching big bad, but he really wasn't in that much of the second half of the season.
No, like he had one little appearance.
I kind of forgot about him because he was in the first four episodes, and then they like kind of snuck him back in there, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about you.
Yes.
Where you been? What you been doing?
And so I think that's also one of the problems with this season. Because again, like, I give it an 8 because it's great. It's great anime, like it's great TV show. And I would give the first season of Invincible like a 10. Like I thought that was perfectly paced, perfect like everything. I love the characters and stuff like that. But I felt like this season definitely took a step back, A, because of that break. But B, there are some points where they had the shock factor.
Yeah.
Which I definitely think helped the first season. But they had the shock factor in the second season, but then would take away that shock factor by like, oh, you thought this happened? Well, guess what? It really didn't happen. Didn't matter. And I hate when like you put emotion in something. You're like, holy shit. And then either episode or two episodes later, psych.
Well, and that's partially because you don't really know what the stakes are. Are these people going to die or not? Is this person, like, because in the first season, there were people dying.
Yeah, and that's what makes Invincible brilliant. Because, like, I know for a fact, if I watch, like, an animated series of, like, you know, Justice League back in the day, mm-hmm. or I watch Batman, or I watch The Avengers, like, or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I know for a fact they're all good. They're all going to come out alive eventually. Somebody might get captured.
How many times has Superman died? How many fucking times Once. Have we seen Superman dead across a thing?
Once.
But still.
It's Doomsday.
But like, still more than any. But we've
but
seen
he
it.
Came back.
But we've seen it so many times and he always comes back.
Yeah. And so, like, so I'm not worried about that. But when I saw that first episode of Invincible in season one, where all of a sudden all these people die.
Yeah.
And then I would go the whole season and only one of them come back.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy shit. And that's because his name is literally immortal. So, of course, he should be coming back. I do think that Rex Splode, his character development in this season, love it. Actually love it.
I do like it. I'm interested to see where it goes. Because
he was a gag character. He was the annoying. Yeah. Like, but, like, this, you actually see him progress, especially after that one scene.
But I mean, it's kind of funny because he talks about that. He's like, it literally took that one scene for me to realize I was an asshole.
Yes. And like, I thought that was great.
And I'm like, damn, does that need to happen to every straight man for them to realize they're a fucking asshole? 100%. And gay men too. Honestly, sexuality aside, men in general apparently need a near-death experience to realize they were assholes.
I thought Cecil's character kind of definitely fell off this one.
He just felt like a nagging bitch the whole time. Like, he just felt like just a whiny, like, you know, Mark, you need to. It just didn't, I didn't understand what we were doing there.
But I thought, oh man, I forgot his name, but his sidekick what he had to go through and everything like that. I actually loved his
Cyril. Does that sound right?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But I thought he was great. I thought Alan the alien coming back. Seth Rogen, by the way, I think he plays Alan perfectly.
I think he plays Alan great. The problem with it is like Alan's kind of hot. And only with the Seth Rogen voice, because it's like kind of
I can't imagine him with anybody else.
He's like a big beefy alien. But he's got that Seth Rogen voice, and I'm just like, oh. And I'm just like, laugh. And I'm like, oh, I would, oh God, I would do anything for you, Alan.
But I think the number one character who's kind of like took a hit was Eve.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't.
I thought she played a major role in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave her her own little special, which I thought was a good special.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
But then you get, out of 8 episodes, you really see her mainly in 2. And the rest, you like, it's kind of pointless. Like,
yeah.
Like, if you took her entire part out, nothing would really change.
Yeah, except for whatever happened on Mars. Mars is the only episode where she, like, kind of mattered.
Yeah, 2 episodes. And so I think that's the only problem with this season. I felt like the side characters in season 1 were very like getting much more developed than in this season, where it was just mostly about Mark battling with the things that his dad has left and has done to him and his family, and especially his mom, him battling of like, what do I do with my girlfriend? I don't know. I'm so confused. I'm very conflicted.
I was so tired of that storyline.
It did.
Just a very like, I was like, okay, we've been playing Will They Won't They for a very long time, and I would like a definitive answer ASAP, please.
Yeah, I don't need 4 episodes, then a break, and then another 4 episodes to figure out where this is going to go.
I think the problem with it was like it was always the same problem. Like it was just over and over. It's like, it's really hard dating a superhero, and him being like, it's really hard dating a normal person. And like that's just the conversation over and over.
If MJ can figure it out in Spider-Man, she can figure it out.
Did she?
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah, they got married. They got married, got a kid.
Uh-huh. Depending on the universe.
Depending on the universe. yes. But yeah, Invincible, again, I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I definitely enjoyed it. I think I'd definitely give it an 8. It's kind of like a Game of Thrones, where like Game of Thrones has such a high peak, and then when it starts to fall off, you're like, what are we doing? I still like
it. It hasn't fallen off yet. It's just kind of stepped to the side a little, and you're like, you're just kind of like, hey, watch that ledge.
Yeah, exactly. So I still recommend watching it. Just hopefully we get more seasons quicker. They've said that we're supposed to get more seasons, another season this year, and it's going to be a nice little rotation, but I'm like, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah.
All right, and so for a big topic, CinemaCon happened. And we're just going to talk about all the movies, what we're excited for, what we really don't care about. And I'm not going to lie. So today, as we're recording, one of the movies I was not really caring for, not really excited for, came out. The trailer came out for it. And now I'm kind of hyped. Transformers 1.
Yes.
I'm actually very excited for this movie. Now that I've seen the trailer, it's an animated movie. So no of the new characters,
like, Shia LaBeouf. What kind of animation? Is it like...
I don't know what kind of...
Is it like 3D?
It's 3D. It is
100%. I'm not going to lie. You sent it to me earlier and I wasn't able to watch it because I was at work. So tell me, like, what are you excited about?
So basically it's like before Optimus Prime and Megatron. Before they become bad guys, they are basically grunt workers.
Oh, so this is like on...
Yes.
The planet. I'm blanking on the name.
Is it Prime? I really think it's Prime. You know, I don't want the Reddit nerds to like really
get mad at us.
So it's like the planet. Planet. I really think it's Prime. Planet, like something like that. But it's the planet where they all kind of originate and stuff like that. Megatron, Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, and there's a woman one. They all are together They can't transform, so they're just grunt workers. And then they find this like mystical kind of area of like old part of the world. And then they get the powers. Then they can transform and stuff like that. And then they have to save the planet and stuff like that.
How they become the Autobots.
Yeah. And then so I guess it's like eventually you get to see how they become like a Decepticons and Autobots. Like, so I'm actually super excited. It just looked good, but also it looked fun. It looked funny. It looked like it actually had, like, it wasn't just forcing laughs, but still had a good action. It's animated. It looked pretty good. But like not your typical animation.
Yeah.
So I'm actually very excited for it.
Well, what else is Paramount putting out? Gladiator 2. I'm very excited for. I want to see hot, sweaty men killing each other.
I'm not gonna lie.
Are you not?
20 years later? We're just randomly?
I think that's when sequels should be. I don't think that sequels should be just one after the other nonstop. I think
you and me definitely disagree.
See, here's the thing. Well, especially with movies like, because Gladiator is like a prestige movie. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it won a bunch of Oscars. Joaquin it was fantastic. Was it was done.
Russell Crowe,
and like, so I think for a long time everyone's like, well, how the fuck are we gonna top that? And I do think that now in the year of our Lord 2024, we have further technologies that will be able to up the ante a little.
But see, like I think you could do Gladiator. And just like I think remakes should be at least 20 years after, but sequels should be around the same time. Just imagine we do, okay, like actually, like they're talking about like bringing back, you know, a Spider-Man 4 with Tobey Maguire. Just imagine, like that just doesn't, like, it's like I've seen it.
It sounds lovely.
I've seen three movies of it. I don't need to see Tobey Maguire 20 years later doing Spider-Man.
I didn't need to see Tobey Maguire doing it the first time. See how silly
he was,
that sounds?
Was fantastic.
And you, but you need. What's I saying? Need. Grow up.
I don't need. Do you need to see Russell Crowe in spandex?
Is he going to be in spandex in Gladiator 2?
Probably.
Why is there spandex?
What are the fuck gladiators are wearing? I don't fucking know what they're
leather?
Wearing.
Leather?
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a big difference between spandex and leather.
All right.
But
all right.
My point is, I'm not excited to see Russell Crowe redo this character. What I'm excited for is it having ties to the original, but then also bringing new life into it, almost like a requel. Like we've talked about this idea of requels and it kind of with what Scream 5 did.
Perfect. Perfect way to do a requel.
But that's what I'm saying is like Scream 5 was 20 years after the original.
And that's why it's okay. Actually, no. So Scream 4 came out like 2000 something. So like 2012.
It was, yeah, it was
like.
But that was. Are you saying that Scream 4 is bad because Hayden Panettiere ate that shit up and Emma Roberts?
Scream 5, you mean?
Are
you talking about Scream 4?
Hayden Panettiere. Oh, yeah, I'm talking about Scream 4.
Yeah, no, Scream 4 is terrible.
Wrong. Incorrect. If you think Scream 4 is terrible, you didn't understand the point.
So another movie by Paramount, If. I'm actually kind of excited to see If.
I'm excited for it, but it's literally just a ripoff of Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends.
It 100% is. Love Foster's Imaginary Friends.
But that's what I'm saying. Like,
and I'm okay with this.
Why couldn't we have just made a Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends? Look, if you want to create a movie that everyone will enjoy, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. And especially...
Topeka.
I like chocolate milk. That fucking cheese. God damn it.
Yes.
Anyways, bring back Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. Didn't need If. It'll satiate me in the meantime.
I'm not going to lie. I was very excited for this movie until I seen the trailer for every movie I've gone to see. That's A Quiet Place Day One. I've seen the trailer for it.
I have too.
Like way too many times for me to be like, okay, like, yay, I'm excited now. It's just like... but I really liked The Quiet Place and the second one. I enjoyed both of those movies.
Can I be honest for a minute?
Don't tell me you haven't seen them or you don't like them.
I am not the biggest fans of them because watching people breathe and pant heavily for 2 hours is not fun for me.
You sure about that?
Yeah. I'm 100% sure. 15 minutes and I'm good. so for me, I'm excited to see A Quiet Place Day One, because the whole time I'm sitting there watching A Quiet Place and A Quiet Place Part Two, I was like, man, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
They should have started with it. Because like for me, starting in a movie that's completely silent, I get the artistic vision and all that. But like going back and explaining now what happened, it feels silly to me.
Nah, that's how you get a third movie. I do it a prequel.
I'm very like, here's the thing. I'm kind of anti-prequel. Unless it's like a long running story, like the Star Wars bopping around timelines, I'm fine with that. But like, if we have a movie and it's A Quiet Place 1 and A Quiet Place 2, we're already doing a prequel.
So, and this is where let's go to our next movie studio, Disney. Don't need a prequel for Mufasa.
Yeah.
I like, as much as Mufasa is a very beloved character and stuff like that, I don't need to see how Mufasa became Mufasa.
Yeah.
And especially that it's live.
Well, and I'm curious, because here's the thing. Lion King is based on Shakespeare. Is Mufasa going to be based on a Shakespearean play? If not, what the fuck are we doing? I think it would be cool if they did that.
That would have been cool with Lion King 2. Make a live action Lion King 2.
I don't know if I can handle a live action Kovu.
Oh,
that might actually like trigger the furry in me.
Deadpool and Wolverine, I am very excited for this.
I'm
buying the popcorn.
What I'm interested to see about it is people are treating Deadpool and Wolverine like it's going to save the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's going to make everything right. I'm curious to see if it does, because I know it deals with the timelines and the variants and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that this does pull it together. And I do think that it's going to... What I actually think is going to happen, this is why I just want to put this out there. I think that it's going to be an incursion in these two... different universes universes are going to get smashed together, and then they're going to move forward from there.
Yeah, the only way I think, because the Fantastic Four is going to be set in like the 60s,
mm-hmm.
The only way to bring them to present time, to bring all this, have you not seen all the stuff?
No.
Yeah,
well, I guess I saw it. I guess I just thought that we were going for a retro theme, because everything's retro themed now.
Yeah, no, it's set back in the day. So there has to be either incursion, they build something that like takes them to the future, blah, 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 like something like that.
Yeah, we need like a hard reset.
But did you hear about the popcorn?
Yes,
no, I am so excited. If Disney is going to make a popcorn box that's even worse than the Dune one.
But it was intentional, I think.
No, the Dune one was not intentional.
The Dune one was not intentional. Yes, no. That was just
Disney's is intentional. Design. This one is good. Intentional. So I'm excited, and I'll buy it. I will 100% buy it.
Are you going to fuck the bucket? And would you...
I'll butter it first.
Would you wash it out and let me borrow it after you're done?
Same time. But I get the fun hole. We're just going to make a hole at the bottom of the...
I think the hole is big enough for both of us. It's like,
speak for yourself. Or speak for... Don't speak for me. There we go. anyway, so we got Moana 2.
I'm excited.
I'm excited for this. I love Moana.
I love Moana 2. I love Moana 2. Get it?
Okay, fuck off. and it's her, like, she's her own thing, get to be her own little badass, go adventure, go out, everybody's proud of her.
I just hope we have a better villain song than Shiny. I did not like Shiny. That was a bad villain song. And I blame Lin-Manuel Miranda, because that man just, he's not mean enough, and he needs to be.
Also, I'm not gonna lie, he's kind of getting stale. Yeah, he's kind of getting stale.
I
won't say that,
but I think he makes good music for Disney movies.
Yeah, no. No. No.
You didn't like the first movie?
No, I'm talking about Little Mermaid, those two songs. He made terrible.
Yeah, those
Wish.
Bad.
I think he did Wish.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I take it back.
Yeah. Inside Out 2, super excited, because anxiety is
I saw an article where apparently for Inside Out 2, they were taking a panel of teenage girls and reviewing the work that everyone had done quarterly. And it's like, imagine having your work quarterly reviewed by a panel of teenage fucking girls.
Yeah. So anxiety, envy, embarrassment, and what's the last one?
Ennui.
What's ennui?
Ennui is like the feeling of longing. It's like you're kind of like missing out.
Oh,
like
yeah,
it's not depression. It's just like you're longing for something more.
Yeah, you haven't found your purpose.
Yes.
You feel like you have no purpose right now. And like, as a former high school teacher, that is very, very factual for a lot of kids now. But like, this is facts. As a kid, you really don't have that embarrassment. You might have a little bit of envy, but like not to extreme of like when you're like, especially like a teenage girl, and anxiety levels, like you just don't have a care in the world. But I do
think that they were very smart for bringing in a panel of teenage girls to talk about this, because like I've said before on this podcast, teenage girls are insane and I love them so much. But
I don't know about that.
They're batshit.
But yeah, so I'm excited for that. And then a new alien.
Alien Romulus. I am so excited because it feels like it's kind of like a fresh start.
All right, be honest. How many alien movies have you seen?
All of them.
Oh, really?
Every single one of them.
Have you seen Prometheus?
Yes.
What do you think about it?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it added a little lore and mystery to the thing. And I did like it as a prequel.
I didn't really care for Prometheus, to be honest. It was just, I don't know. I felt like Prometheus just felt like another retelling of like Alien. Their home world.
Okay, well, what you're saying is the exact thing how I feel about A Quiet Place Day One.
Anyway, yeah. Excited for Alien.
Like, everything you're saying was exactly what I was saying, and you told me I was wrong. Anyway.
But you liked it, so then you're contradicting your own self.
Okay, and I'll probably enjoy Quiet Place Day One. Like I said, what I said was I've been waiting for this movie. I wanted it first.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
But I think Prometheus makes more of it. But did you see Alien Covenant?
Yes.
How do you feel about that? I thought it was worse than Prometheus.
Yeah.
So what I'm excited about is
Aliens was just so superior to every other movie.
I'm hoping that they do it justice. I mean, I really liked Alien versus Predator.
Oh, duh.
It was such a good
Predator
movie.
Now Predator's different. Predator's different. Predator 1.
Fantastic. I mean, all the Predator movies are great.
Okay, would not say that. But the new one, the new Predator movie that's on Hulu, have you seen that?
Predators? Or the Prey.
Prey,
yes.
Great. Loved it.
That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping that this gets this movie gets the treatment that like Prey and Predators did. Because they kind of updated it. They made it a little, they just added to it. That's the thing is like, if you make a sequel and you don't add to the story, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
Same with prequels. How do you have a whole prequel and it adds nothing to the main story?
And speaking of, you know, sequels, what do you think about Beetlejuice?
I'm so excited. You don't know. This is another one where I'm like, 20 years later, I think that's perfect.
No.
Fuck off. Do you think this is going to be bad?
All right, first, wait, when did Beetlejuice come out?
Oh, it was probably like, I'm pretty sure it was the 90s.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So yeah, this is like 30 years. I am excited. I don't want you to think I'm not excited. I am excited for Beetlejuice 2. I think it's going to be awesome. The trailer looked...
Well, it's just that it feels like they got everyone back and everyone's just ready to be.
And that's the
again.
Only way you can do these like 30 years down the road kind of sequels.
And then the fact that they were literally like, hey, get that weird bitch from Wednesday, Jenna Ortega, and she's going to play Lydia's daughter. Perfect.
Perfect casting.
Perfect.
Perfect casting.
It's going to be so good.
Another sequel that this is probably my number one sequel that I'm ready for. Is Joker 2.
Fully ado?
Yes.
I can't wait.
Gaga is going to go crazy, and I'm excited for it.
I'm so pumped. I'm so pumped to see the crowds on opening night, because it's going to be the Gaga stands and the DC stands, and it's going to smell weird in that room.
It is going to smell weird. Yes, I agree with you. But that trailer, I was very impressed. The people need to understand this is going to be way different.
I like,
and that, I'm okay with that.
I like that DC had to be like, guys, like it's a musical, but it's not like a musical musical. Like it's not all musical. Like, yeah. they're like there's musical numbers, but it's not like a musical. Like they really had to be like, DC fanboys, please don't come for us.
And I think the thing that makes like Joker so brilliant is that you don't understand, like, I think it's really portraying of like how crazy Joker is that like all this is like made up.
Yeah.
All this is made up in his head, and probably how he gets Harley Quinn into this fold
I'm curious about her story though, because she's a patient in that hospital and I'm,
yeah, and in the original, she's the doctor.
She's the doctor. Yeah. So I'm curious how we're changing up this story, because that was not lost on anyone that like, oh, she's not a doctor now. So what is she?
Yeah. So how do they fall in love? I really do think maybe in his head, she is a patient. Mm. That he's there to help her. Mm. He's here to help enlighten her.
So you think
her.
It might have been a misdirect?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think that's how crazy Joker really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And so I'm very excited. Also, another Mad Max.
Oh,
another Mad Max. I'm very excited for this one.
Okay. I was like, you do not sound excited. I am very excited for this.
Yes.
I think that Anya Taylor-Joy is going to be perfect.
Yes.
I think it's going to be great. And I do.
Have you seen the full trailer for it?
I think so. I saw it in theater, so I hope so.
Oh, yeah.
But so, it
looks fantastic. She's going to be a badass. I cannot wait. Because when we saw her in Dune, mm-hmm. I was just like, really? Like, I was like, I don't really see her as, like, you know, being in, like, action kind of movies until we got this.
You obviously haven't seen her in a lot of movies.
What? What's a action
Well,
movie?
She was in the New Mutants as Magic and literally was tearing holes in dimensions and fighting people with a sword, monsters with a sword. She was also in The Norseman, which was an action movie.
Oh, she was in Norseman. I forgot. I'm not gonna lie, I did forget she was in that movie.
And I'm pretty sure she was like a spy in some movie, like Anna or something.
She was
like
a spy in a movie.
So I was like, that's just an odd critique.
But like, I feel like Mad Max is just a way different kind of action movie.
Fair.
This is like her first time of like, she is the lead role of a
main character. Motherfucker killing people.
Exactly.
Where you see her become Furiosa.
And I'm not going to lie, based off of like what I've seen, based off of like, you see the background, you see all the kind of stories and how great the last Mad Max was, this could be potentially, you know, in that category of like best female, like action, like lead yeah. roles.
I think I agree.
Kill Bill's still number one.
What I kind of found interesting about the original Mad Max is it wasn't really about Max at all. Like he was just like there along for the ride. It really was about Furiosa and like what the fuck she was doing.
Yeah.
Like, everything was kind of about her. So I'm very glad that we're going back to her time and really introducing her as a character into this world. I loved Mad Max, which is maybe a little surprising, but like I thought it was such an interesting way to do it.
Very, like my dad showed me it, and I was just like, "What the fuck is this? It's different," mm-hmm. and I love it. Like I love it for it.
It's just like when you have little like twinks on pedestals,
yeah.
Like with like gas masks on, and they're like playing guitar, and you're just
yes.
like, and you're just like, and they're like spraying.
This dude is like, you have to be high off acid to think of this
and
shit.
You're just
like,
and you're just like, what the fuck? But it's so fucking
yeah.
cool.
And speaking of something that's kind of like crazy and twisted, let's go to Universal. You got Twisters. I'm actually very excited. I love the original Twister. Love the original Twisters, especially after a tornado just hit.
I'm very excited.
A couple days ago, I
think Midwesterners have a specific love for
yes.
the movie Twister
yes.
and are very excited for Twisters because, girl, we've lived through it.
Yes.
You haven't lived in the Midwest if you haven't like ran from a tornado or like whatever. Like I'm also that person that like I'm sitting outside. I'm like, I'm keeping an eye on it. I want to see it. If I see it start swirling, then I'll go downstairs.
No, the second I hear that siren downstairs.
Grow up.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not white. Wicked. So Wicked is my favorite musical. You can't picture that, can you?
I just think it's a very basic. To me, what I hear when you say that is you have probably just haven't seen a lot of musicals.
I've seen 7.
The fact that you know that off the top of your head, I couldn't tell you the number of musicals I've seen.
I've seen like adult production 7, like with like high school. I've seen a lot.
Oh, I'm talking about like even just musical movies.
Oh no, I'm talking strictly like live musicals. I've been to 7.
Okay,
musicals.
Well then that's fair because that's a whole ass production and everything. That makes sense.
Yeah, and I would say Wicked's still my favorite. I really want to go see. I wanted to see Michael when they came for Michael Jackson. Really wanted to see that, but I really think the casting for Wicked, this movie, is top tier.
I think it's so good. I can't wait to see the movie that destroyed a marriage. Because that's what this movie is. This is the reason that happened with Ariana, and I'm ready for her to come back. I'm ready for the people to embrace her as Glinda.
She's a perfect Glinda.
I think she's a perfect Glinda.
She's a perfect Glinda.
I think she's amazing. I think the
thing is, okay, like I wouldn't say I'm a Ariana Grande fan.
An Arianator.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Bro, that's so bad. That's so bad. Like Swifties, it's just like, okay, cool. Like, but like Gaga's, like
the new album drops tonight at 11. We gotta wrap this up.
Oh, Jesus Christ. But I was like, Ariana Grande, like that's terrible. That name's terrible.
The Arianators.
But I think Ariana Grande, like right now, probably top 5 vocal. Like talent.
Oh, for
wise.
Sure.
Talent wise, right now in the entire world, top 5.
And I've seen some stuff where she talked about she's like having to de-Ariana herself for this role and like really like get into the Glinda of it all and like understanding like the what the character's singing versus what Ariana Grande is singing because she's only ever sang from her own perspective, well, other than a few things, but like I mean she's really mostly sang from her own perspective, so I'm really interested to see, and I'm just ready for it.
I'm actually really excited to see Cynthia though sing.
Yes.
I'm actually very excited. Her taking that character over, I loved her and fucking Harriet. I loved her and Harriet.
I think that she's going to just give this role a little bit more oomph.
Yes.
Like, don't get me wrong. I think Idina Menzel did a great job, but I don't think anyone's really done as good a job since Idina Menzel.
Yeah, facts.
Like, the other recordings of it, it's like, oh, this is still fun, but like, it's just not that... Not that witch. It's that witch.
And that's what you need in this. Getting through, we got Despicable Me 4 coming out. Like,
okay.
I'm not gonna lie. I like the Despicable Me.
I mean,
memes.
I like them when I'm
like Minions.
I like them when I'm like stoned. Like,
but like instead of like there's like two splitting. You have Disney adults. And then you have people who are obsessed with Minions, who are obsessed with Minions as an adult. And I'm like, bro, you need to chill. Like, yes, they're cute.
But they're not that cute.
No, they're not.
Like, and we're not going to speak in that Minion voice either. Stop that. Ba-ba! Stop it. Grow up. You're an adult. You're about to have a mortgage.
And then Lionsgate coming out with stuff. The Crow.
I'm so excited for The Crow. Do not understand. I loved the Crow movies as a kid. They were dark. They were moody. It was like a sexy man with paint on his face. And he was like killing people for revenge. And like, and like the original Crow. And like, it was very sad, like in real life, what happened with that main actor. But I'm so excited for them to like bring a little. And then they had a couple other adaptations that like just didn't really stand up to the first one. And so I'm very excited to see this version and like go fucking ham.
What do you guys think? What are some movies that you're excited that's coming out of CinemaCon? Let us know in the comments. I think that's going to wrap up our show. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Joe.
And this is Double Trouble Features.